Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Lou Ann Crane.
Well, welcome to Family Talk. We're glad you've joined us today because we're going to hear an incredibly important conversation about your child's health.
And specifically, your child's weight and how it can affect their future. This is an issue on a lot of parents' minds because the American Heart Association has said that one in three children today in the U.S. are either overweight or obese. Luann, that's shocking.
Well, Ryan, the reports even show that there has been a 10% increase just in the last 3 years. So obviously, it's a topic of great concern to those of us who are parents. We know there are serious physical consequences that come from carrying extra weight and not being physically active. Things like heart disease, high cholesterol, diabetes, the list goes on and on.
Because of that, my dad addressed this topic a little while ago with distinguished physician Dr. Robert Eckel, and they discussed why it's such a problem today and what parents can do to prevent their child from being overweight or obese.
And we should mention, Ryan, that your dad's not here with us in the studio today. He's taking a few days off to help your mom recover from knee surgery.
That's right. Of course, we would love him to be here, but we'd rather have him supporting my mom, and she's doing great, and we covet your prayers during her rehabilitation.
Well, physical health is very important to your dad. In fact, he has a lot of friends who are physicians. Dr. Robert Eckel is one of them. This gentleman has more than 30 years of experience as an MD. He's a professor of physiology as well as a professor of medicine in the Division of Endocrinology, Metabolism, and Diabetes at the University of Colorado Health Sciences Center in Denver. Ryan, I should add, he's also the former president of the American Heart Association. So this gentleman has a lot of knowledge and wisdom on this topic.
And here now on this Family Talk broadcast is my dad, Dr. James Dobson, talking to Dr. Robert Eckel.
Now, I have really been looking forward to talking to you today about childhood obesity. And it's my understanding from reading the lay press in the newspapers and so on that the problem is increasing dramatically in the children of parents in the Western world now. And it is just something that people are really starting to worry about, and the schools are beginning to address it. How much of it is related to the internet, to television, to video games, to sedentary activities where children used to get out and play football or whatever?
Well, there's a big debate, and I think most people in the field would agree that both the food intake side, meaning too many calories in, and too little physical activity both work together to result in this problem. So is it the food? Is it the fact that there's so many calories in the food, and then when kids are inactive, they're eating more because they're having access to food, or is it simply one or the other? I think it's both, Jim. It's hard to really blame just one of these two factors.
But we can document that.
Yes.
It's not just an impression. Children are fatter today than they were 10 or 20 years ago.
Children are fatter today, yes.
And that's not good.
That's not good.
And it concerns parents, but they often don't know what to do about it.
Right, and parents can play an important role in preventing this problem in their children. Now, keep in mind, genetics and environment influences most diseases. It's not entirely environment. It's not entirely genetics. And for adult obesity, genetics plays a major role. If you look at obese adults and you look at their parents, you often find obesity in one of the two adults. And particularly when you look at obese children, Jim, one or both adults are often obese too. So this is maybe some environment, but it's also some genetics. They're both important.
This is a subjective evaluation that may or may not be valid. But I've noticed in restaurants which offer an eat-all-you-can-hold or all-you-want kind of deal where you pay one price, and then you can just eat at many different buffet lines. You know what I'm talking about.
I like that for oyster bars, don't you?
I like it too, but I have noticed that often the parents in there are overweight, and the kids are too. And it does look like it must be related to a lifestyle that involves food.
I think it brings up a very important point, Jim. You know, once obese, you know, whether you're an adult or a child, and keep in mind, children are growing. So they're expected to gain some weight with growth. But late adolescence or early adulthood and thereafter, once obese, you tend to eat to maintain your body weight if you simply respond to your environment normally. And I think that's just the simple math of obesity maintenance. And you got to do something.
Why does your body work against you in that way?
Well, I think, you know, the Lord was very creative as he thought about putting our body together. And remember, it's only in recent times where food availability has been there for most of us most of the time. If you think about, you know, the early and late 19th century, even the early 20th century, where most work was industrial and involved physical activity, and ultimately centuries ago, back into the Middle Ages, et cetera, ultimately food availability was a major issue. And unless you were part of the nobility, you were a king or a queen or his or her court, you may not have had enough food, and you had to go out and find it. So I think the Lord built into the body the ability to store excess fat to prevent against starvation when food wasn't available. Now, keep in mind, we don't live to 35 and 40 anymore, Jim. We live to 75 and 80. And so obesity now takes its toll. It's no longer a benefit for most people under most circumstances.
I have a report here that came from the internet, CNNmoney.com. And the date on it is October the 15th, 2007. And the headline on the article is not going to please one of the fast food companies, but this is what it said. Hardee's offers breakfast burrito. This is Hardee's. And a new product had been introduced October the 15th of 2007. And I'm just going to read a portion of it. Hardee's on Monday rolled out its new country breakfast burrito. Two egg omelets filled with bacon, sausage, diced ham, cheddar cheese, hash browns, and sausage gravy, all wrapped inside a flour tortilla. The burrito contains 920 calories and 60 grams of fat.
Are there jalapenos on it too?
that's all it's missing. And it goes on down here. In 2003, the chain introduced a line of big sandwiches, including the Monster Thick Burger. And it is a 1,420-calorie sandwich that's made up of two one-third-pound slabs of beef, four strips of bacon, three slices of cheese, and mayonnaise on a buttered bun. Is there any question why we are obese with that kind of offering?
But, Jim, nobody's making you buy those items, correct?
How many teenagers get that for lunch?
But Jim, so what? Where's the failure in the system? I mean, in other words, why would someone who ultimately is kind of raised in an environment that is concerned about life and concerned about health and concerned about nutrition and physical activity want to regularly partake in such a venue? I just it defies me to think that you could do that often without having some sense of consciousness about that behavior.
Well, I don't do this, but I don't do it, but I will tell you that I grew up eating very good hamburgers and like them. Mm-hmm. You know, that was one of the staples in my house. Of course, the beef was probably better, and my mother did a better job of preparing, and it certainly wasn't a breakfast burrito because I don't even like eggs and some of the rest of this stuff. But fast food is what I grew up on, along with the fact my mother was a great cook. There were places to get hamburgers and French fries and things like that.
Well, I think you and I have discussed this before, but the concept of foods being bad or good is not the way we should look at foods. I mean, I think the label of food is bad or a food is good is really not appropriate applied because I think it's the overall diet that we're concerned about. Let's take that teenage girl or boy who would go have one of these breakfast burritos once in every 3 months. I mean, could we be concerned necessarily about that food intake pattern? Probably not if his or her diet was overall a high-quality diet and they weren't overweight. I mean, the issue is we don't want to be condemning of that hamburger periodically. Jim, if you told me you had a hamburger once in a while, that's great, because if your overall diet is quality, yeah, meaning fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and you have a hamburger once in a while, we're not going to argue with that type of a food intake pattern. But when people are overweight and feeding their weight problem or at risk to develop obesity and eat like this indiscriminately, we have a real concern.
Hmm. Looking on down this article, which is really kind of depressing, even Hardee's chicken salad. Now, that would be wonderful. Topped with onion rings and crispy chicken has 1,100 calories and has 83 grams of fat. The final thing I'll read is the Center for Science in the Public Interest, a Washington-based advocate for nutrition and health, has called the Hardee's line of thick burgers food porn. And maybe that says it all. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want to go there, Jim.
Yeah. But you do see teenagers especially eating right like this.
So the issues are, I think, for parents and for young people is to what should be an appropriate lifestyle to prevent obesity or treat it once present. I think prevention takes on a kind of a different dynamic than ultimately treating it, because, you know, once a child is obese, then that's a whole different agenda than ultimately preventing undue weight gain. I think parental dynamics, parental behavior have a lot to do with the way kids pattern their own behavior growing up. But some things have been identified as ways to prevent undue weight gain during childhood and development and ultimately through early adult years. And nursing is one thing. Women who nurse their children for 6 months exclusively with no other food intake pattern have adults that grow up to be more likely to be a normal body weight. Huh. Ultimately, eating together as a family, assessing quality of diet, limiting, you know, the amount of sugar-containing beverages that are consumed. Ultimately, having some sense of regular assessment of body weight, working with healthcare professionals as a team to ultimately develop strategies to prevent undue weight gain. So there are things that parents can be doing and that involves the healthcare profession and involves the home life that ultimately can be instrumental in helping prevent childhood obesity.
You know, I see this as related to the pace of living that is so common. We're all, it just seems like the whole country and Western nations in general are going too fast. They're running, they're huffing, they're puffing. And that's what leads us frequently to the fast food alternative, because it takes time to create nutritious meals. It takes time to plan a meal and all sit down together at a table. And also, you have to supervise your kids. And if you're working till 7 o'clock at night and there's nobody home and you leave a few bucks on the table, what are they going to do with it? They're going to go to something that is probably high fat and quick and easy. So it's sort of a cultural lifestyle, isn't it?
To the credit of fast food restaurants, though, I think increasingly we see the availability of lower caloric choices. But is that the choice young people are making, or even adults? Or are they alternatively choosing the higher fat, higher calorically dense item because of its taste or preference for that food?
All right, let's talk about treatment, not only from you, a physician who deals with these patients, but what you recommend to parents. Let's suppose you've got a 7-year-old little boy who is 20% overweight, and he's getting a lot of flack from his friends, and yet he can't seem to control it. What do you do? He comes into your office.
Well, I think under those circumstances, the parents, maybe a single parent, that's an issue we didn't really talk much about, but there are many families with one parent, and you know a lot about that. Uh-huh. But it may be much more difficult with a working mom only who takes care of several children to have that family dynamic that's operational. But she or both parents or even dad alone need to work with the healthcare professional, hopefully a physician, but could be another healthcare professional such as a dietitian, to work out a systematic plan for reducing caloric intake to get them back on the growth curve. Remember, kids are growing. We expect them to gain weight as they get older. But we know from plotting growth curves when kids are on a slope or a trajectory that puts them above the normal curve. So I think that's a program that takes place over months to years. It doesn't happen quickly. So if it's a modest amount of overweight, then I think they can work slowly to change the rate of growth to modify the growth curve into a normal range.
Well, what else would you do? You get them into activities, get them into Little League or whatever else?
To modify weight gain or weight, you need to modify what we call the energy balance equation. That's energy in, meaning what we eat, and energy out, meaning physical activity. Limiting screen time, whether it be television or computer, insisting that the child get a minimum of 60 minutes of activity at least 5 days a week, preferably every day if possible. I mean, there are issues that come up in neighborhoods where physical activity may not be able to be carefully carried out under safe conditions. So these are issues that need to be individualized. But then also working on the calories in. For growing children, I think calories in have to be there for normal growth and development, but they don't have to be as large in terms of quantity as they often are. So limiting portion size, serving meals that have less calories in the meal, less fat. I mean, fat has twice as many calories as carbohydrate and protein. So if you just weigh the food and you use less fat, that's got to be fewer calories. Mm-hmm. So these kinds of dynamics, the family, the parent, working with the healthcare professional team to develop a strategy to reduce that weight as the child continues to grow.
You mentioned that you and I and our wives, Shirley and Margaret, had lunch together a while back, and Margaret was expressing great concern about the emphasis within the schools on overweight kids and how they're starting to weigh them, and they're starting to talk about it a lot, which, if it's not handled right, can produce unbelievable social pressure on those that are overweight. You know, if the other students learn what the weight is of a given kid, you know what they're going to do. They're going to give them a name, and it's going to hurt. And I think there can be lifelong emotional damage done in this area more than any other. We are hearing an awful lot about kids who lean toward or think they might be homosexual, and the importance of the school protecting that child from being ridiculed by, if it's a boy, by other boys and so on. To my knowledge, there are very few people talking about the impact of kids making fun of each other for being fat. I mean, you don't have to be very much overweight to just be shredded by the kids. And I think it tears into the self-worth of that child, destroys his confidence, and the school really needs to handle that one carefully. I agree with Margaret.
Well, Jim, I think this is a complex issue, and I'm not sure there's a one-liner to say this sums it up and this is what we should do, but let me reflect on this a bit. The government, whether it be local or state or federal, should not really legislate health. But yet we know that the impact of obesity in children on ultimate health and outcome is going to be substantial, and the price is yet to be paid for that, because it's just in the last 20 or 30 years we've seen this dramatic increase. In fact, much of that increase has actually occurred over the last 10 years. Uh-huh. So this problem, again, is not getting better. The way this is administered and should be administered, in my opinion, is that information should be provided to the parent to acknowledge the fact that their child has a weight for height relationship that puts them in a higher risk category. The television the other night on the news identified a woman who was clearly obese herself about her child being given a obesity report card, if you will, or a BMI report card, indicating that the child's weight was also excessive. And this mother was very offended by this. She felt that was her business, not the school's business. And ultimately, she believed that her daughter's weight was just fine. It related to the family weight, and this runs in the family. And so she dismissed this as being important. Now, I think there's a fine line between the school playing too much of a role or no role. The obesity problem in childhood is a complex issue and can't be solved by one intervention. At the American Heart Association, we worked with Governor Huckabee and President Clinton to develop a program called the Alliance for a Healthier Generation. That program related to four components. Approaching children directly about the importance of a healthy lifestyle. That program was aired on Nickelodeon for $30 million of free advertising. The second component was the industry. And the industry related to the arrangement with the American Beverage Association and ultimately with snack food companies to reduce the caloric content of foods kids have access to school. I don't know about you. I had no access to any food in school when I went to school. The third component relates to the school systems. And from a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, there are multiple schools now that are entering into a more healthy dynamic at schools, school lunches, school breakfasts, and mandated physical activity in the school systems. And the fourth component, which I'm very involved with still, despite the fact that I'm playing a more passive role in this overall program, is one called the healthcare professional. I feel very strongly that physicians have to be more informed and more engaging about weight-related issues in children and, by the way, in adults, but particularly in children. Pediatricians have not been actively engaged, adequately informed, or feel they can be effective in modifying childhood behavior or the behavior of the parents to influence a healthy body weight.
That physician is likely to be the one person the parent would take advice from.
That's my hypothesis. A physician that doesn't relate to what your diet's all about and how much physical activity you have is a physician that is inadequate in his or her job description to meeting the needs of the obesity problem. That doesn't mean they're going to be able to solve the problem. It simply means that if they don't draw attention to it, who will? And who does a family or a parent respect more than anyone? It should be, if not their pastor, their healthcare professional.
Hmm. It's my understanding that many schools no longer make soft drinks available to young people and that that's been a pretty effective program.
Well, I think the data to suggest that having beverages in schools or snack foods in schools that have less calories and there are fewer choices, there's a modest amount of evidence that may be beneficial in modifying weight in school-aged children. But I think, Jim,
it is happening.
It is happening, and those vending machines have been changed or in the process of being changed. The question comes up that I would address back to you, is that enough? Can we solve the childhood obesity problem by simply modifying vending machine choices in schools? I don't think so.
Tell me if it is still true that the favorite meal available to school children is pizza?
I don't doubt that for a bit. I've not seen the data, but I could be convinced that that were true. Mm. And I think another thing is worthy of attention here is if a child is moderately obese or severely obese, they need help. And that help may go beyond the primary care physician or the pediatrician. I mean, that help may need to come from specialists, potentially people that could enter them into group programs for families to effectively modify the home environment, or occasionally, even for more severe obesity, increasingly, even a surgical procedure now is being implemented for very heavy children in their teenage years to prevent that weight from being retaining for the rest of their life.
Well, our guest has been Dr. Bob Beckel, who is a professor of medicine at the University of Colorado Health Sciences Center. Yes. You're a very, very busy man, a great friend, you and Margaret, to Shirley and me. I've been delighted to have you here. Again, thank you and give our regards to Margaret.
I sure will. Thank you, Jim.
Great practical tips every parent can put into practice from Dr. Eckel on this Family Talk broadcast. Of course, we need to mention before you put your child in any exercise program, take them to their pediatrician. Mm-hmm. Luann, a lot of what you heard today was common sense, but it's a great reminder on why maybe to pass up the fast food restaurants and to focus more on your child's health.
Well, it can be challenging, but we need to know there are solutions out there, mm-hmm. Ryan. There are things we can do.
And we want to get those tools into parents' hands. It's trying to help us reach that destination of better health and happier and healthier kids. We've got a lot of those resources at myfamilytalk.com. One of them is from a good friend of ours, Dr. Walt Larimore, and he's got a book called Supersized Kids, mm-hmm. How to Rescue Your Child from the Obesity Threat. We'll have a link at myfamilytalk.com on where you can get that book. We also have links to other broadcasts we've done to help our listeners, you, be healthy and happy as well.
Or if you'd like a CD copy of the discussion to pass along to somebody, that's available at myfamilytalk.com. Or you can give us a call, 877 877-732-6825-877-732-6825.
Luann, before we end, I just want to say thank you so much to those listeners who have helped us financially in the past month. We just couldn't do this without your support, and we are thankful that the Lord put it on your hearts to help us.
And we can't continue throughout 2011 without people partnering with us throughout the next few months. You can donate online at myfamilytalk.com. Or, Ryan, here's an idea. Write us a letter.
Do people still do that?
I'd love it if they would. Drop us a note. Our mailing address, 540 Elkton Drive, Suite 201, Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80907.
And make note, we've changed our mailing address a few times since last February, so I'm going to give that address one more time. It's 540 Elkton, E-L-K-T-O-N, Drive, Suite 201, Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80907.
Have a great weekend and join us on Monday when we'll hear from our good friend, Joe White. Thanks for listening.